You're listening to Radio Boston. I'm Tiziana Dearing. Let's talk housing. Downtown. In office buildings. The city's going to try, at least, using a new property tax pilot. Catherine Carlock is a real estate and development reporter at the Boston Globe here in Studio 2. Welcome back.
Thanks so much for having me.
It's great to have you. I think we might not have your mic. Why don't you say that one more time?
Can you hear me now?
I can hear you now.
Great.
So listen, at the most basic level, if I get it, the idea is to basically turn some cubes into condos.
Basically, yeah.
Go ahead.
Well, so the idea is that there are a lot of offices downtown that aren't super full, but the cost of converting those to condos that or apartments that could be rented or owned by residents is pretty expensive. So the city's saying, what can we do to make this easier for developers to make this conversion happen? And a lesser property tax bill is where they landed.
So that's an easy way to make it cheaper by saying, listen, you're going to have to put a lot of money into turning that cube into a living space.
Yeah, exactly.
So one of the things that we can do to make that more attractive to you is charge you less in property tax as an incentive to do it.
Yeah, and that's something that developers can then go out and say to the lenders that are going to be funding these projects to say, hey, we may not have to pay property taxes for the first 5 years. And that's something that's music to lenders' ears for projects like these.
Okay, so let's back up a little bit because I want to take a kind of, I want to get a sense of orders of magnitude here, right? So first, on the housing side, the median price of a single family home in Greater Boston hit $900,000 for the first time ever in May. Mm-hmm. That same month, condo prices hit $726,000. That's both from the Greater Boston Association of Realtors. On the other side, according to data from University of Toronto, foot traffic in downtown Boston is still only at about 50% of what it was, and about 30% of Boston's office buildings are vacant. And that's according to Globe numbers. So 20%, excuse me. So real concerns about the future vibrancy of brick and mortar retail, transit, et cetera. Why is having people live there a good idea?
So one thing that a lot of folks talk about is sort of the idea of a 15-minute city, that you could live in this downtown area and have everything that you need within a 15-minute kind of walking distance. That's something that urban planners and other experts talk about a lot. The idea I think the city and other cities across the U.S., New York, D.C. are pursuing is bringing somebody into a space that isn't really used right now. So it may not be a lot. Like, you know, there's not really a sense of how many houses could be created as a result of a program like this, but it would be something just to bring some more life, some more vibrancy, some more people spending money, going to restaurants, buying groceries, stuff like that, just to get a little bit more of economic activity so downtown doesn't just completely fall into this urban doom loop situation that we're seeing in cities like San Francisco.
Okay, so there's two things I want to pick up on what you just said. One is may not be a lot, but it's something. The other is urban doom loop. So I'm just going to flag those. I want to start with the may not be a lot, but it's something. Because when we have talked with Mayor Wu about housing, the lots of somethings is something that she's really talked about. So back in May, we were talking to her about affordable housing, the city's housing crisis, and she was kind of talking about putting pieces of the puzzle together.
It's not just one silver bullet or one way that we're working. This is really anything and everything. We are moving forward with all hands on deck approach to housing.
So sort of to that idea that you do some of this and you do some of that. So this doesn't have to be some huge panacea.
Right. It's not intended to be the one fix. You know, that the administration has been focused a lot on what's called accessory dwelling units. So an in-law studio in someone's backyard or adding gentle density near transit stations, things like that. And so this project, again, or this pilot program would be intended to create, just add to, just keep adding something. And the idea being, if we keep adding a little bit of somethings, then it's not necessarily going to be a bunch of huge, tall towers like you would see in New York, but something that more fits in with what Boston already is.
Okay, now I want to get to this doom loop thing. Because just like I'm hearing more and more people talk about this 15-minute city idea, I'm seeing all kinds of, okay, and by the way, I always see the word words doom loop and San Francisco in the same sentence. Yeah. So perhaps you should explain.
Sure. So the idea of the urban doom loop is that the less foot traffic in downtown, less people buying houses, less people going into, or fewer, I don't know, fewer people coming into downtown, then creating an area that people just don't want to go into anymore. And downtowns are really the economic hubs of so many states around the U.S. And for San Francisco in particular, I mean, their office vacancies are in the 40s, which is not where we are, luckily. But
40s mean 40%.
Yeah, in the 40% in the 40% vacancy, because a big problem for them was they went so hard on tech, they really put a lot of eggs in one basket. Boston is not in that situation because we really do have a pretty diversified office market with different types of companies leasing different types of space. So we're not there yet, but I think the idea behind this program is to say, okay, let's maybe look at the space that is a little bit underutilized right now and see what we can do with it so we don't get into that 40% area.
So we're talking with the Boston Globe's Catherine Carlock that focuses housing, but specifically this new move by the city for this pilot that would give property tax breaks to people who own these big office buildings where there's vacancy to try to turn some of those office spaces into residential spaces instead. All right, so now I want to do fun with numbers, right? Because I want to dig into this pilot. So first, when we say pilot, what that means is what? A limited window where you could apply to get that. So talk about that. How does this work?
It's a very short-term program. So it would open this fall. You would have to apply by June of next year. And then if you qualify, you would have to start building by October of 2025, which is a pretty quick turnaround for commercial development projects. There are a number of requirements that you'd have to hit. You would have to comply with the state's new stretch code, which is an energy efficiency code that's aimed towards electrifying buildings and not using fossil fuels, which tends to be pretty expensive. You'd have to comply with the city's new affordable housing requirements. So having 17% of your units be affordable, along with having 3% of for voucher holders, which is up from the 13% requirement right now. That's also pretty expensive. So the idea of behind this, but then if you do comply, you would get a 75% tax break off of the residential tax rate, which is already 60% less than a commercial tax rate.
So
I know, fun with numbers, man.
Yeah, exactly. So according to your reporting, actually, currently $24.68 per $1,000 of assessed value. That's if it's office space,
right? If it's office space, yeah.
Okay. Now, if it's residential space, it's $10.74 per $1,000 of assessed value?
Yes.
Okay. And then you'd get a break on that,
You would get too? A break on the residential value, yes.
So you'd pay 75% less than the $10. So
up
is that
to
right?
75% less. So the way it works is it would be a 29-year agreement between the city, a developer, and the Boston Planning and Development Agency. And
that's a lot of money.
It's a lot of money.
For a long time.
For a long time, yeah.
So, you know, you're paying $25. Now you might be paying as little as, let's say, $5 or $6.
It would eventually be, it wouldn't be 75% for the entire duration of that 29 years, but the city would work with developers to say, how can we make this feasible for you? How can you, the developer, then take this pitch out to investors, out to lenders to say, hey, can you give me a couple million dollars to make a project like this, do the construction?
All right. So now, since we're kind of getting our geek on and we've had fun with numbers, here's the other thing that I want to do with this So I used to run a big organization, mm-hmm. right? And at one point, I had to find new headquarters for that big organization. This was, 2009, 2010. And I did not know that we had such as Class A and Class B and Class C commercial real estate in Boston, right? And really, the stuff that we're talking about that's having the most trouble getting people back in it is what's called Class B and Class C.
Yes.
And I want to physically take people into this space, right? Because this is the stuff, it's got Art Deco elevators, right? Mm-hmm. And the old marble floors that are black and white checked floors. And it's on the side streets of downtown Boston. Mm-hmm. And take us into the buildings that we're talking about that one day you might live in instead of work in.
Sure. So the Class A towers are the fancy stuff. You know, the super tall, the Hancock towers.
There's giant fountains in the middle. Right, and Panera. Right.
Where, with all, you know, the Deloittes and the McKinseys are going into.
Right.
Class B is tends to be a little bit lower to the ground. Not quite as expensive rent-wise. Maybe the amenities aren't quite as impressive as you'd see for a Class A. And you know, maybe the elevators are a little bit older. Maybe the bathrooms are a little bit older. But a lot of companies, like, or a lot of nonprofits, a lot of companies that can't afford the Class A rates for rent will go into these types of Class B spaces. So yeah, the offices on the side streets, the ones with the, you know, the smaller restaurants, those that are still around, unfortunately.
Right now, maybe the restaurants aren't there anymore.
Right, and so you're not seeing that foot traffic into those restaurants because those offices are seeing higher rates of vacancy and availability. So those offices that are emptier might lend themselves more to conversion to residential.
So then, Catherine Carlock of the Boston Globe, why is it not easy to take a floor of one of these buildings with the cool old Art Deco elevator and the older bathrooms on the side street? I don't know. Pearl Street or Milk Street or, you know,
right.
Let's say in the financial district, I'm making that one up. Or why isn't it easy to turn that into some kind of crazy cool condo or set of rental apartments? It turns out it's not.
It's not super easy.
Why?
So it's really a case-by-case basis. But on the whole, there's, you know, if you go in and you look at what's called a floor plate, so that's basically like what the layout of the floor of the office
looks
like. A
footprint.
Yes,
like a footprint. We all know what the footprint of our houses look like.
Yes.
Or our apartments.
So the requirements for residential are very different than the requirements for office. And the changes that it would take to go from office to residential require a lot of investment that you wouldn't necessarily see.
Like what?
So bathrooms. Offices tend to have centralized bathrooms. Apartments have their individual bathrooms. So that
so you got to move a lot of plumbing.
It requires moving plumbing for the whole building. HVAC. Offices tend to have centralized AC and HVAC units. Each residence would have its own individual HVAC unit.
So you got to spider all that stuff
off. And all of that stuff is really expensive. And developers say, hey, it's going to cost a lot of money, and I'm still going to make less from rental rates for apartments or condos than I would from an office tenant. So even if my office is still not nearly where it was pre-COVID, I'm still making as much money, or even if it's a little bit less, it's not worth it for me to make this investment.
Because of so much cash outlay.
Unless I have some sort of incentive to make it happen.
Okay, so Catherine, then that begs kind of the last big question on this, which is, it's a pilot to see if it'll work. What's the reaction, Ben? Is it enough? Is the sense, and we've already said it doesn't have to be a panacea, right? But is the sense that developers are waiting and they want to do this and we're going to see people living in buildings that used to be cubes?
I think the response from the development community has been really, really positive. This
okay.
has been something they've been asking for a long time. I spoke with David Greeney, who's the CEO of Synergy Investments. They own a lot of Class A and Class B properties in downtown Boston. And he said, we've had a number of constructive conversations with the BPDA and
Boston Planning and Development
Agency. Boston Planning and Development Agency. I spoke with another developer, Bruce Persolet of the Mount Vernon Company, who said this could be something that would prompt developers to look at projects that they hadn't considered before.
Interesting. So what are you going to watch?
I'm going to be watching who's applying in the fall.
Interesting. All right. Catherine Carlock, real estate and development reporter at the Boston Globe, talking to us about housing. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having me.